large-scale structure perturbation theory, which another way, if it's renormalizing galaxy bias, is the main thing that I'm focused on here. And this calculation, it's a little bit technical, but it's not technical in a hard way. And I would say this is practical in that I'm going to argue we really need to understand galaxy bias better for future precision cosmology. And it's also at the same time somewhat fun in that it's a fresh look at bias, and also for me somewhat of a fresh look at perturbation theory and renormalization. So one thing that I didn't even realize myself, it's not actually, no. I still don't even know what the joke it would be. Oh, okay, yeah, no. Anyway. I didn't realize this until quite recently, but just how little of the observable volume we've really probed. So the Sloan luminous red galaxies, which is the biggest reasonably well-sampled galaxy survey, and it's not even as well-sampled as you'd like for large-scale structure, only probes about 1 gigaparsec. Well, the universe at Z less than 5 contains 700 cubic gigaparsecs, and you really can go higher than 5 with some 21 centimeter or something. So we just have scratched the surface of large-scale structure statistics. So in contrast, say, to the CMB, where we've observed all of the large-scale structure we can at least reasonably easily observe. So imagine just cutting out, you know, 1/700th of this map. And that's basically where we are with large-scale structure, or even less than that. And future surveys, so it's not like this is not reasonably possible to observe. Future surveys are planning to do this. One is the next generation of the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which will multiply this volume for LRGs by a factor of something like 6, extending the 10,000 square degree survey to about redshift of 0.7, and measuring the baryon acoustic oscillation scale to 1% in a couple of bins. This still, though, is a tiny fraction. Going up to redshift 0.7, you get a tiny fraction of the volume of the universe. There's a proposed joint dark energy mission, ADEPT, which would survey large-scale structure from Z equals 1 to 2 over 3/4 of the sky, and that would get over 100 cubic gigaparsecs. There's other similar European space missions. These are aimed at primarily at baryon oscillations. We had a paper, Chang et al., recently on how you could observe all of the neutral hydrogen in the universe basically out from redshift 0 to 2.5. Again, get a lot of volume. So large-scale structure is going to get a lot more precise, and theory has to be able to meet that, which is kind of the point of this talk. So the basic picture of large-scale structure, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, inflation or something predicts a spectrum of small perturbations. We measure them while they're still small with the CMB. The fluctuations keep growing at coming towards the present, and the fluctuations become large on small scales and nonlinear, and galaxies form, and everything becomes very complicated. But on very large scales, the fluctuations, like so the scales Olivier was talking about, fluctuations are still close to linear, and we measure them by observing galaxies or other things which trace mass fluctuations. So here's just an example of the Sloan Galaxy Survey density map. So in the motivation for doing these measurements, there's been a lot of talk lately about baryon acoustic oscillations using this standard ruler to measure, to map out the expansion of the universe as a function of redshift and use that to probe the dark energy equation of state or whatever is making the universe accelerate. But there's still lots of other things that you can do with large-scale structure. Measure neutrino masses as they affect the power spectrum, omega matter, the shape of the primordial power spectrum, non-Gaussianity, like Olivier talked about, modified gravity. Anything that affects large-scale structure, we can measure. So this is the mass power spectrum with the black curve being linear theory. This is A in linear theory at present. The red lines are the nonlinear power from a simulation fitting formula at different redshifts. So the top one is the nonlinear power at redshift 0. The other ones are 1, 3, and 6, except I've rescaled them to make the linear power the same. So this is just this shows you the difference at each of these redshifts between linear and nonlinear power. Down here, it's hopeless for what I would call large-scale structure, which is just to have a definition of large-scale structure for myself. I tend to use structure that's sort of computably connected to the initial conditions in a straightforward way, the initial conditions or very large scales. Once things become very nonlinear, it's not easy to compute that connection. Not that you can't do anything, but so when I talk about large-scale structure, I'm mostly talking about this regime up here where the nonlinear and linear power are not very different. But the difference is, so there is a fairly wide range here, which I'll show a little more later, where the differences are large enough to be significant for precision cosmology, even though they're not large in a fractional sense. And here's just, skip that. Okay, so here is the bottom line reason why we need to think about galaxy bias more. This shows from a paper by Sanchez et al. A comparison between 2DF galaxies power spectrum, which is the black curve, and SGSS galaxies, which is the red points. Well, the black points is 2DF, the red points is SGSS. And the model for galaxy clustering we've been using for a couple decades now, basically, is to multiply the mass is linear bias, which K to independent linear bias, multiply the mass power by some constant, that's the galaxy power. And this is an explicit demonstration that this does not work in the real universe. So these 2DF and SDSS observe two different kinds of galaxies, and the power spectra are not proportional to each other. And this is the scales where they deviate. They have a different shape, so this would be K-independent bias, are ones that for a long time we had hoped we could use, hoped we could use linear theory here, although I wouldn't say there was ever any compellingly good reason for that. So it's describing this kind of deviation that I'm going to be talking about for extending the bias model. And this matters because when you infer cosmological parameters from these two power spectra, assuming linear bias, or I'll show.
Is it understood why the samples are different enough, or in what way they're different to produce the power spectra that looks so different?
Yeah, I mean,
can you say Sloan used this kind of objects, and 2DF uses another type, and that's why, or?
Well, could this be a compelling explanation for why the difference gives you this difference?
I guess my question is, is this an analysis problem, or is it that the populations are fundamentally different, and is that understood?
The point of this paper, this was known before this paper. The point of this paper was Ariel Sanchez went back and did exactly the same, as much as he could, the same analysis on both sets of galaxies. So it's not, these are both his power spectrum measurements, not the Sloan power spectrum measurement.
Do you believe that difference truly exists in the universe, not just in issues with the data?
The paper seems pretty convincing.
I agree.
But it's not just the same guy analyzing it, but the same population?
No, they're different. They're different populations of galaxies. There's no reason to expect them to be the same, I would say.
Fine.
I
fine, but there might also be no reason to believe that the difference is due to bias.
That's my question.
I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm just asking you your opinion. You clearly believe that that difference is bias.
I believe it, yeah.
This is a definition of bias.
Unless it's some issue with the survey.
On large scales is where you don't believe, there, you believe less and less as you go to larger scales.
So I don't know why he made this plot this way. He could have. He could have made these points, he could have made the large scale points agree. And the small scale points then wouldn't agree.
Exactly.
And the point is they can't agree everywhere, and the k dependence kicks in, you know, no later than about here, which is where you would expect it to kick in. Basically, it's where the powers start, the mass powers start.
Yeah, fine, good. You've explained it.
Thank you.
They're not overlapping spatially, or in the sense they're different in galaxy morphologies. I mean, different galaxy
positions. Yeah, they're different galaxy positions. And he even shows how if you pick out certain Sloan, you can pick out certain subsets of the Sloan galaxies that will then agree with the two.
Yes, it's just a decision.
So in that sense, his code for analyzing the two isn't broken, I guess.
Because of that.
So it's
crazy, but the state of the art in terms of actually doing cosmological parameter estimation, say with state of the art defined by Cosmoland C, is this what they call QMOP, where Cole et al. Had some simulations with some semi-analytic models for the galaxy power spectrum, and they made a plot of the linear power and the galaxy power. And then they wrote down by hand this formula, which is has no theoretical motivation of any kind to describe what they were seeing for the k dependence of the bias. And this is what is used to try to correct for this kind of difference. But as Sanchez et al. Showed, it doesn't. The cosmological parameters come out at sort of two sigma level different, and that situation will only get worse as things become more precise. So the question is how to, what I wanted to do was think about bias again and make a well-motivated, do I say this? Yes, driving motivation. In order to achieve the goals of future or even current giant large-scale structure surveys, we need precise, reliable calculations of the observable statistics like the galaxy power spectrum, which include a means to marginalize over uncertainties in the model, so the model for galaxy clustering. And I'm taking I'm going to take the maximal, we don't care about galaxies themselves and their physics attitude towards this. We want to sweep all of the galaxy physics under the rug as much as possible. And if you think about it, that's what renormalization and perturbation theory is designed to do, to sweep all of the UV, the high K, small, in this case, small scale effects into a few numbers. And the magic of renormalization is that it can work with only a few numbers. And here it's going to be the bias parameters that get renormalized. So the alternative is a more halo model approach where we believe that galaxies form in halos, so we can simulate halos reasonably well, a dark matter simulation. We can't simulate the formation of the galaxies, but we can simulate halos, and then we can sprinkle the halos into the galaxies into the halos and look at how they cluster. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that approach, but it is not clearly necessary when you want to only describe scales that are at least that are perturbative, that aren't highly nonlinear. So I wanted an alternative. So the alternative, which is not new, is to describe bias as, so describe the galaxy density as a Taylor series in the mass density. So rho here is the galaxy density, delta is the mass density. You can write a Taylor series, so delta is supposed to be small. Each of these terms are just think of them as undetermined coefficients because they're in principle derivatives of the galaxy density with respect to the mass density, but we don't know how to calculate them, so they're free parameters at this level. So linear theory bias would be right here. The galaxy density is proportional to the mass density times some coefficient. And the goal here is to go beyond this, include higher order terms in the Taylor series, and see what happens. This has been done some in the past, but in the cases where it's done, delta, so there's an issue here that this is supposed to be the real space density field. And with no smoothing, this density field, these deltas are not small in any sense. If you're talking about, the variance can be arbitrarily large with no smoothing scale. So people in the past have imagined that we're going to be talking about a smooth delta and define this series for a smooth delta. The thing is, just you know from the fact that sigma 8, say, is roughly 1, that in order to make that smoothing scale large enough to actually make this Taylor series make sense in a smooth way, make the fluctuations in delta small, the smoothing has to be larger than 8 megaparsecs, and then that smoothing, that which you've just applied this arbitrary thing, there's no physics, that smoothing affects the predictions you make on the large scales you want to talk about. So it affects the power spectrum. So I'm going to argue that there's a better way to do this. So the very first simple warm-up calculation I'll do is, let's just calculate the mean density of galaxies. At second order in delta, that you get rho 0 plus the mean of delta 0 by definition, and then delta 2 squared. So you get this at the lowest order, you would have said rho 0 was the mean density of galaxies, of course. But you get this extra thing that comes from fluctuations. And with no smoothing, this can be arbitrarily large. Infinite, 100, it doesn't really matter. There's no reason not to think it will be larger than this lowest order term. But there's a simple solution to this, which people have done in the past without calling it renormalization. I'm just.
Remember, is the galaxy density if there were no density perturbations?
Which is, of course, ridiculous. But yes, if at lowest order I take the lowest order term in the Taylor series, I calculate the mean, I get rho 0. The universe could be homogeneous. That claims that rho 0, that calculation claims that rho 0 would be the mean density of galaxies. But you don't expect any galaxies in a homogeneous universe. So you expect the mean density of galaxies to come from fluctuations. And this renormalization of the mean, so what I'm going to do is define the mean density of galaxies to be rho 0 plus this sigma squared is just expectation value of delta squared. And if there were more, there are, of course, higher order terms. Just sweep them all into the mean density of galaxies. So this is the bare mean density of galaxies. This is the renormalized mean density of galaxies. And you can substitute this back in. And this is a completely trivial calculation, which people have often just automatic. So what all this does is leads to in the galaxy density equation leads to a minus. So this is now the observed mean. You get this minus sigma squared, which cancels that term. So people have done that before, just written it down as the obvious thing to do. But let's keep going and calculate fluctuations around the mean density of galaxies. So this is, here I just divided out the mean and subtracted it, so I have delta galaxy. And redefined these coefficients, so I have things that look more like bias parameters. Now I have C1 delta plus C2 times this plus C3. And I calculate the correlation function of this thing. the simplest term to look at in the correlation function. I'm going to calculate the correlation function to fourth order in delta, which is that, which is why I've been keeping terms up to third order in delta. So the simplest term to look at is this one, which is this.
I'm just going to find it in coordinates, but I'm
not going to follow over there. Simplest term to look at is this C, is the cross term between C1 and C3, or the first and third order term. You get C1, C3, delta A, where
A is one point in the correlation function, B is the other point. So when you do so this is a Gaussian random field to start. This is the mass density field. Its gravitational evolution will make it non-Gaussian. But if we only want to calculate to fourth order in those initial perturbations, I can just use the first order solutions for deltas. So these are Gaussian. These deltas are Gaussian, and you can see that you'll get a correlation function from delta A times delta B, and then you'll get a sigma squared from the other two delta Bs paired with each other. So you'll get something that looks like this, which is correlation function for these two different points, A and B, times a sigma squared. And this thing, this is just a k-independent constant, which may be large, may be infinite, is in any case large. So that's a correction, looks like a correction to the bias, because the linear theory bias is just here, a correlation function times C1 squared. So we're going to redefine the observed bias, so what you would see for the ratio of galaxy correlation function to matter correlation function at arbitrary large scales to be C1 squared plus C1 times C3 times sigma squared, except there's going to be more because there's another term like this which comes from this cubic term, which is not zero once you do gravitational perturbation theory for these mass fluctuations, which become non-Gaussian. So this, the bottom line. So this shows the galaxy power spectrum. This is the linear theory bias. This is that term I described. This is this thing that comes from another similar renormalization of the linear theory bias that comes from the gravitational perturbation theory in that cubic term. You get out of this full calculation when you consider all the terms. Another term, which is not zero as you go to k equals zero. So one thing you would hope to get out of this kind of this perturbation theory to higher orders is you would hope that as k goes to zero, the original linear theory bias model holds. It doesn't. You don't have to add terms on arbitrarily large scales as you calculate terms in this expansion. This thing does not obey that. It's significant as k goes to zero. But you can absorb that, and it's also potentially infinite or large. There's no reason to expect this term to be small. You can absorb that piece that doesn't go to zero as k goes to zero into the shot. So one thing I think I wrote down, but I didn't mention when I, in that original Taylor series for the galaxy density as a function of mass density, you could have said, well, it doesn't have to be deterministic, so I should add a random variable or something to represent noise around that Taylor series. This says that even if you didn't, you should. You get this piece that, in effect, renormalizes the shot noise. And that's the basic story. You have a renormalized shot noise, a renormalized linear theory bias. One thing to notice is that the third order bias coefficient is gone. It doesn't appear anywhere in the results because the only place it appeared was this piece that you absorbed into the
into the linear theory bias. And as a practical matter, that's a very good thing, because it means that instead of when you calculate to fourth order to the next beyond linear order power spectrum, you might have thought you'd get two new bias coefficients. You really only got one. You got this C2. The second order bias doesn't go away. And this is the final renormalized formula, where you have the shot noise, power, linear theory power, and then you have these terms, which are all controlled by, well, there's some power spectra here. They are controlled by one second order bias parameter. Okay.
But what is JS2? That's the stripe as a function?
It's the second order perturbation theory for gravitational collapse kernel.
Okay.
Which this is a term that came from the qubit. And the thing to say about these, and as I'm going to show, these terms both go to zero as k goes to zero, which is a good feature of what are supposed to be corrections to linear bias. They also are not sensitive to high k power, which may not be obvious, but it's by construction, because the things I absorbed into the renormalizations were the things that were sensitive to high k power. It happens that this one was both a problem as k goes to zero and potentially a problem by being sensitive to high k power, and you could fix both of those problems by renormalizing shotnoise. So this shows the resulting non-trivial part of the effect on the power spectrum. So this is the galaxy power spectrum minus the shot noise divided by the linear theory bias squared times the mass power. So this is the thing that I'm at large scales, it should go to 1, and it does. This is just this formula. It goes to linear theory bias on as k goes to 0. And then these curves, the black, green, and red curves, show three different values of this second order bias parameter and the shape of bias that's predicted. This blue thing is just, blue line is just for scale, basically. It shows the baryon oscillation. So this is the relevant scale for baryon oscillations.
And this shows. So one question is how sensitive these terms are to high k power and whether I have a cutoff or not. I'm doing these calculations with no cutoff because I don't need one. The solid line and the dashed line, one is these extra bias terms evaluated with the nonlinear power, which is a factor of 10 or more different at high k. K is not much higher than this one from the linear theory power. This one's evaluated with the linear theory power, and so and they agree with each other on the sort of quasi-linear scales where you would hope to be able to use this thing. This is the scale where the mass power is becoming strongly nonlinear, and there's very little hope of using perturbation theory at all. And so you can use this for cross correlations, the same renormalizations for cross correlations between galaxy and mass. One interesting thing, which I'm not going to show, not going to go through the calculation, but you can prove that if you have a finite range non-locality of bias, so you say delta galaxy doesn't depend on the mass density at the same point, it depends on the mass density in some arbitrary but finite range radius, you can show that the term that you get will be, so this is delta galaxy linear theory bias times delta plus some term which is in Fourier space k squared times r squared, where r squared is the typical scale of the bias of the non-locality, times some order one coefficient. Unless you have a very pathological shape for the non-locality, any shape of non-locality with the appropriate coefficient should be described in this way. So this, And the thing to take away from this is that as long as k, the k that you're looking at, times r, the scale of the non-locality, it is a reasonably small number. So you're looking at scales well above the scale of the non-locality. This correction to linear theory bias should be small and proportional to k squared. So this is a derivative expansion. It's the same thing. Never delta, never smooth delta. I mean, well, in, once you Fourier transform it, doesn't matter if it's smooth. This, okay, so I, this is, so I'm trying to describe non-local bias. I say delta galaxy at point x is a, just some arbitrary function of delta at any x. And I do a Taylor series, I do the same Taylor series I did locally, but I do it, take the derivative of f with respect to x everywhere. So I get some kernel. I get, and instead of, this is the generalization of a multivariable Taylor series to an infinite number of variables, you know, which are the deltas at different points in space. This kernel is those derivatives, but I don't have to specify what they are. All I need to know to derive this is that that kernel goes to zero beyond some typical scale.
Version of delta, right? Because that's really your smoothing kernel. K is your smoothing.
No. I then do an expansion of K in spatial expansion.
But K should go to zero at large distances, right?
Right.
Right.
This is the first order term in that expansion. So it's just saying that if I have any shape in real space, finite range shape in real space, in I Fourier transform that shape, I can always, for kr, k times r, the width of that shape, small, I can expand that, the Fourier transformed kernel in k times r.
So the first order term is a smoothing. That's just a convolution. And then there's higher order stuff.
Well, there's higher, right. But thinking
about that, that's not just smoothing, but that one thing is just a convolution, that's a smoothing.
Yeah, this is, well, but it's not, it, this is the Taylor series. It's the derivative. It's df at delta.
Yeah, but that's a, it's a convolution.
It's the convolution. It's whatever convolution that real galaxy physics gives you. It's not some convolution that I've defined. It's the truth.
That's fine, but you don't know about k, but that's some smoothing with some unknown function, okay? Because that k is a smooth function, isn't it?
It could be a delta function. If it's a delta function, then that's equivalent to r being zero, and you go back to the original.
So my problem is like that's a smoothing function, but this guy is more clunky because you have Laplacian and delta in it. So that's what I don't understand.
It's not a smoothing function. It's a function.
It's a translation of a bunch of different data into the density contrast, right? It's not just some smoothing over a scale.
No. So
you can do lots of different things with functions. Smoothing is one of them, but not the only.
So the thing that makes me happy here is that you can then put this into your fitting, marginalize over with some constraint that the coefficient should be order one. Where like if this was a Gaussian, I think this really would be one. The shape, but the marginalizing over that this coefficient with the constraint is equivalent to marginalizing over all real dependencies of galaxy.
So this is a gradient effect. So the delta is this basic divergence. If delta is very very clumpy, right?
Well, we're not gonna look at this in real space. We're just gonna Fourier transform this,
okay.
And we're gonna look at large scale modes. So yeah, it at right. if you wanted to, if you, as you go to high k, where k here is the mode you're looking at, then this term will become large, and the higher order terms will also become significant. So you can't do that. You just have to, you have to stick to a scale that the k you observe has to be substantially larger than the scale of non-locality, which is that R. But under those circumstances, so the real win here is that you might have imagined that if I try to write down a general non-local bias model, I'll get an infinite number of free parameters, and then it'll just be a total mess. This is arguing that this should be a robust, as long as you have finite range non-locality, a robust form for that non-local bias.
Well, I would argue to, for this to make sense, you have to dispose delta, but
I don't know why do you say that?
Because Laplacian delta would make sense.
Maybe we could argue this point later. Yes,
well, so I can stop here since I think I'm over time. So the most obvious future direction is to actually use this both for analyzing doing the cosmological fitting and also comparing to numerical simulations. I'll stop there.
Just a very generic question. You didn't quite advocate, but you nearly advocated measuring every mode inside the horizon, or inside redshift 5, or whatever.
Well, you'd like to.
Yeah, I mean, can you just comment on that? Like, should we do that? And is that high priority, et cetera, et cetera? Like, when Gil said this thing about using the alien transmissions to figure out the initial conditions, I mean, Finkbeiner said,
who cares?
I'll be right.
Well, so the baryon oscillation surveys need this volume to measure the dark energy equation state accurately. The adduct is one of the JDEM.
Because you're truly, you're mode limited even. Meaning, even if we measured out to redshift 5, we'd still be limited by the number of available modes for the baryon acoustic feature. Is that what you're saying?
Well, as long as your field is Gaussian and you have no systematic errors, then you can just keep measuring that distance scale more and more precisely the more modes you have. Yeah.
So,
I mean, even if it's not Gaussian, you still keep measuring it better, as long as the large scales were Gaussian.
So basically, we should measure the amplitude of every mode.
Yes.
Okay. I'm down with that.
We only have one
spending time on that, so
it's just a matter of, you know, do we do it in the next 5 years or in the next 20 years?
Yes.
Eventually, we've got a universe. We can reasonably easily measure all of the large scale modes. We should. Right. We'll do it.
Right. I mean, the amazing thing about it is it's actually technically possible to measure every mode.
Well,
there's no fundamental.
Except for ones hiding behind the galactic plane.
Yeah.
Even those.
Some
methods.
Yeah.
And it's not clear the 21 centimeter will work, which.
But it's not obvious the 21 centimeter.
There's a huge amount of volume at redshift greater than 5.
Yeah.
And like Gil's showing, right? Gil's figure kind of underestimates how much volume there is because it's only 2D.
Yeah, he was being proper.
I did not come in. I did no volume.
All right. We're not visually underestimated.